nagging is not an attractive thing to watch or to listen to. Here's a scene from the 2006 film The Breakup, starring Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn, who play a couple with big problems.
All I ask, Brooke, is that you show a little bit of appreciation, but I just get 20 minutes to relax when I come home instead of being attacked with questions and nag the whole damn time.
You think that I nag you?
That's all you do! All you do is nag me! The bathroom's a mess. Your belt doesn't match. Hey, Gary, you should probably go work out. Nothing I ever do is ever good enough. I just want to be left the hell alone.
Nagging can destroy a relationship and is usually a sign of deeper discontents. Today on Radio Times, why people nag, what's the relationship between the nagger and the naggee, and how can a couple learn to better communicate? And we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. It's B. Janet Hibbs. She's a psychologist and family therapist in private practice in the Philadelphia area, also author of a book called Try to See It My Way, Being Fair in Love and Marriage. And B. Janet Hibbs, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty.
And on the telephone is Howard Markman. He's author of a book called Fighting for Your Marriage, also a professor of psychology and co-director of the Center for Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver. His website is loveyourrelationship.com. And Howard Markman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty, and good morning, Dee.
Hi there,
nice to have you both here. And I hate to begin with a definition. We heard that scene from The Breakup, and I think that is a good definition of what nagging sounds like. But as a psychologist, B, how do you see nagging?
Nagging is really one of the fundamental challenges of how to negotiate and live with another human being that we call our spouse, and how to stay connected and love each other through all the challenges, money, kids, chores, sex, the in-laws, and you have to be able to negotiate them fairly without, you know, feeling like you're too criticized or too controlled.
So if you can't do that, then you nag?
Then you nag.
How about for you, Howard Markman? How do you define, or how would you define what nagging is?
Right. Nagging is almost a ubiquitous pattern in all relationships, married relationships, dating relationships to a degree. Certainly when couples cross that threshold into living together today, which is more and more common. And we have to deal with things like Dee was saying. And when one person wants something done and the other person doesn't comply on their schedule, and it keeps on happening and happening, you get into this pattern of nagging, which is pretty extreme. The everyday, please do this, and kind of asking a couple of times, and it eventually gets done, or the couple works it out otherwise. That's not really nagging. That's just kind of asking for things that are natural, and the other person doing it or not. And eventually, in a healthier couple, it gets done. When not, we have nagging and a problem.
And what you're talking about, Howard, is demands that one partner puts on the other. The other partner refuses to comply by those demands, and things escalate from there?
No, it's not an active refusal. If it's an active refusal, we're dealing with something completely different. It's much more natural, and there's a lot of, you know, miscommunication or, you know, lack of problem-solving skills. And it's kind of when people just don't handle. What happens is we all have trouble in relationships handling negative emotions, and nagging is a symptom that we're not doing well as a team.
Well, B, let me get you back in on the conversation. And again, looking at this relationship between the person who nags and the person who is being nagged, and it seems the person who is being nagged looks like they are ignoring what the nagger is saying.
They do look like that, and I think, as Howard was saying, it's really a two-way street dynamic. It is a cyclical response, a negative response to unmet request. And it's not, and it's a little bit like a cumulative effect. If we think of it as a social allergen, at first we're not that sensitive to the allergy, and then over time, if it continues, we become more and more and more until more sensitized until we're hypersensitive, and then we begin to personalize the problem, and we think the other person doesn't care or they're disrespectful, and so it becomes a very like a personality flaw of the other.
I mean, that sounds like a toxic, potentially
very,
toxic,
very toxic
relationship.
Yeah,
Howard, did you want to add something to that?
That was excellent. I don't have anything really to add, and I think just the key is that it is one of the predictors of relationship distress, breakup, and divorce. But I think what Dee says is just exactly right on.
Well, Howard, here's a question for you. Do women nag more than men?
I think in general, yes, but it has to do with the system. If you don't have someone who brings up things without the other person not doing it and complying over time. So I think women just tend to be more sensitive about the early signs of relationship issues, and hence tend to bring up things about the relationship more often. But it's a really, really good thing that there's one person in the relationship bringing things up. Men often, in a, you know, it's about a 60-40 ratio in our research at the University of Denver, men tend to withdraw in part because they don't want to fight. So we often have men playing the role of being the voice of not fighting destructively, which is great, and women wanting to talk more. So in our approach, we help people talk more and fight less.
Well, I do want to pick up on that, Debbie. Let me give you a chance to weigh in on that as well, because it almost sounds like the nagger is the aggressor, and the naggee is the more sort of passive or maybe passive-aggressive person in the relationship.
So, first of all, I wanted to say to Howard, I always love your research, so I always learn something from it. So thank you for those insights.
Oh, you've made my day.
Go ahead.
Paradoxically, nagging is considered by therapists, and I think it's even by the person who does it, as a low-power maneuver. If you could control the situation, you'd change it. So it's a frustration that you can't control it. So the person who's nagging actually feels more out of control. They can't get the other person to comply. And so what Howard's saying about men withdrawing, that's true. Women tend to give kind of too much advice. Well, why don't you do it this way? Why don't you do that? And as a style, and men as a style tend more to, you know, what looks like withdraw resentfully or roll their eyes in frustration. And I want to comment that each one of us, even if we're not in this pattern, is familiar with nagging because it has a parent-child feel.
Well, let me pick up on that. The idea, and perhaps this is why someone might withdraw or not want to respond, because you feel as if you've been infantilized in some way.
You're being scolded.
You're being scolded. Yeah, go ahead, Howard.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think people may feel that, and it's almost like we pathologize the nagging, you know, use the term aggressive and passive-aggressive.
Right.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's accurate. I just think it's a problem in the relationship. And I think what happens, and Bea mentioned this, is that when we don't get our needs met and we get emotional, we tend to vilify the other person. And we pathologize the other person. And I think that's absolutely wrong. And if you find yourself thinking about your partner as having psychopathology, that in most cases that's incorrect and a sign of a problem. And hopefully therapists, you know, don't give couples, and couples therapy is, you know, extraordinarily difficult for a lot of people unless you're well trained in it, like someone like Dee. And you don't want therapists falling into that pattern and saying, okay, you're passive aggressive or you have a problem.
Labeling people. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we need to have it's a systems problem.
Gotcha.
In the relationship.
Gotcha. Go ahead,
Dee.
So I also want to just make one comment to all the women out there who have been pathologized as naggers. As Howard said, it's about a 60-40 split. And I want to just acknowledge that I think it's also a developmental phase in marriage, because the unmet requests tend to happen with over demand. So women often nag because they feel overburdened, in particular by childcare and that sort of thing early on. And men tend to nag because they feel underappreciated or neglected. So the topics vary, but, you know, both people have complaint. So I do think it's a myth that women are the only people who nag.
But it sounds like you're both saying, and B, I'm looking at you, that it's about respect or feeling some kind of perhaps lack of respect in the relationship. I'm asking for something. It's not happening, so I ask again. It's not happening, and one can see how respect or even trust could be part of.
I think.
Go ahead, Howard.
Okay.
I just want to say that I think what happens is what we call in our approach hidden issues come up. And I think often when one person is asking for something and it's a small thing and it's not getting done, they start thinking, why is that not getting done? And often what gets triggered is, well, if he or she isn't doing this, he must or she must not care for me or love me. And all of a sudden we go from an everyday issue to a deeper issue. And again, I think that is an error, a negative interpretation when it goes from you're not doing things, you're not helping me, you're not supporting me, till you don't care for me and love me. And I think that's one of the major issues when we work with couples, is that one person, and it's often the woman, is feeling uncared for, and that's because the other person is not doing their part, not to help around the house, mm-hmm. but communicate love and affection and passion in other ways. You don't want to communicate I love you by complying with the other person's request. That's not a good thing.
Go ahead, Bea. Looks like you want to add something.
The other thing I wanted to add is that what I often find in my practice is that this is a pretty gender-neutral observation, that people who tend to nag are planners and organizers, and they also may have an anxiety about the topic and maybe, as Howard's saying, a hidden issue. And people who fail to deliver, the naggies, are people who value spontaneity, don't like to be boxed in, aren't as well organized, are often ADD, and it's undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. And yet, you get a lot of misinterpretation, as Howard is saying, and pathologizing of the other person, whereas, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, as Edward Freeman, a family psychologist, said, it's not so much the pathogen, it's the host response that gets you in trouble.
Well, I would think early on in a relationship, those kinds of differences would be attractive, right? You see something in somebody that you find attractive.
That's partly true, and it's also partly that in early part of our relationship, we're much more vigilant about being on our good behavior. So men put the toilet seat down early on, you know, and women don't complain about, hey, you left your dirty socks on the floor. But after it happens 100 times, then you get to complaining.
What do you think, Howard? Yeah, go ahead.
Two comments there. I think this is just a different way of saying what Dee said, that our research clearly shows it's not the differences between people that matter, it's how we handle the differences, and we have trouble, you know, regulating our negative emotions when we're upset. Now, I have to say the reason you can prove that it's not really gender is you just look at gay and lesbian transgender relationships, and relationships are relationships, issues are issues, and you get the same patterning that's associated with happiness and distress in, again, gay and lesbian and transgender relationships. So the issues are the issues.
And we're
so
almost,
it's not just gender.
I hear you. And how we're almost up in a break here, but I hear from both you and B that there are things that can be done to address this issue of nagging.
Absolutely. If it's a matter of handling differences and communicating better and particularly handle negative emotions, we can do that, as B would tell you, in the therapy office and workshops I present for couples. Very, I don't want to say it's easy, but if people want to change the pattern, it can be changed.
Well, let's take that short break, and we'll look for the answers to the question about why people nag and what can be done about it. Howard Markman joining us by telephone, author of Fighting for Your Marriage. Also, his website is loveyourrelationship.com. He's a professor of psychology, also co-director of the Center for Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver. Here with us in our Philadelphia studios is B. Janet Hibbs. She's a psychologist and family therapist here in the Philadelphia area, and she's the author of a book called Try to See It My Way, Being Fair in Love and Marriage. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from PNC Wealth Management, helping customers live achievement by crafting personalized solutions to grow, preserve, and transfer wealth. More information is available from John Conaway at 215-585-5438.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Gianandrea Nuzeda leads the Philadelphia Orchestra in Rossini's William Tell Overture and Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony. Also, the orchestra's Juliet Kang performs Prokofiev's First Violin Concerto. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online philorc.org. March 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Kimmel Center, the William Tell Overture, and more with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Voters from Georgia to Alaska and in plenty of states in between are set to weigh in on the Republican presidential nomination. I'm Melissa Block. 10 contests take place tomorrow, and we'll bring you the latest results and analysis, plus reaction from across the nation. Special coverage of Super Tuesday from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 8 on WHYY.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen talking with B. Janet Hibbs and Howard Markman about why we nag and how we can stop it and what does it mean. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So, B., let me start with you. And it sounds like there are communication problems between these partners.
Right.
And which can lead to nagging. How do you sort of diagnose what's going on there?
Well, partly, as Howard's saying, you look at the heightened level of reactivity. And if you're going to solve a problem with nagging, you first have to have people make reasonable requests and in a way that you have to remind them, what's your goal? If your goal is just to criticize the other partner, then you're going to wind up with an unhappy marriage. If your goal is to actually get negotiate something reasonable and fair to each of you, then you have to do it in a constructive way.
And to you, Howard, are people aware of their nagging behavior?
Yeah, great point. I just want to say that people in the Philadelphia and New Jersey area are very lucky to have such a person as Bea as a resource and as someone to go see. A really good marital and family therapist, couples therapist, are very, very hard to find.
So, Howard, you've made my day.
Mutual Admiration Society here.
I'm not saying that to be effusive about it, but it's really, there was an article in the Times yesterday about couples therapy, which I think was in many ways good, in many ways off base, because a good couples therapist can really help people. And I think around helping with this nagging pattern, or generally what we call in our workshops danger signs, that there are ways that are handling unmet needs, unmet requests that are triggered that, again, people need to be aware of these patterns. That's the first step. That if you're not aware of these danger signs, you're going to keep on entering them. And then you need to have some basic skills. And we believe, actually, we can teach one person in a couples therapy for an individual, one person some of these skills that they can use at home in terms of stopping the negative interaction patterns and then have a meeting just to talk through whatever the issue is that that people are disagreeing about.
And give us one of those skills, Howard.
Well, one basic skill is a stop action, just stopping the negative patterns. And the other one we call the speaker-listener technique, where you have a meeting and one person talks and the other listens, and then people just get out their perspectives about the issue that's going on, not talking about nagging. That's a mistake, but talking about what the issue is, cleaning up the house, taking the kids to school, money issues, and talk about that without fighting. Separate out discussion from solution. We're a problem-solving-oriented society. So don't try to solve. Just talk and listen. It sounds easy, but it's a little bit harder when you have a lot of negative emotions, as Bea could tell you, I'm sure.
Yes, because it's hard to listen. But that's interesting, Bea, because what Howard is saying is if there is a problem, don't talk about the nagging. Talk about some of the underlying issues or talk about the needs, the requests, the wants.
Right, yes. I agree with him, and I think that part of the solution, in a way, is for each person to first begin with thinking of a benign explanation that might drive the other person's behavior. So instead of, you must not care about my time or you would have done this by now, to think maybe you forgot. Like maybe you got busy and it slipped your list. And then there's the what my favorite is, in a way, to instruct people is begin with what can I do different?
The I part.
Because often we're so focused on what we are not getting that we forget to focus on what the other is giving. And so it becomes just such a negative kind of reinforced cycle.
Well, and it sounds like ownership. I mean, if you say I, then this is my role.
I can do something to improve this also. So it's the locus of control. I can do something to improve this rather than I'm helpless, it's all your fault, and, if only you did this, then I'd be fine.
Howard, go ahead.
Yeah. Great points. Just a couple of quick comments. I tell people at our workshops, and particularly men, if your partner makes a simple request, and you can do it within 10 minutes, no matter what else you're doing, just do it as long as it's not against your the law or your religion or your moral values. That will go a long way. Because I think, you know, as Freud once said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and often it's just a matter of getting these things done that have to get done in daily life. That's just the way life is. And dedication and persistence and commitment is really part of it, and doing your part. The best example is an example Philadelphia baseball fans will relate to. Jamie Moyer, who's going to turn 50 this year, one of your lefty pitchers, is now with the Rockies, my baseball team here, and baseball is good for marriage, which we can talk about some other time. But, you know, he's pitching at 50 years old, and that's about dedication and commitment and wanting to get it done. And couples can do the same thing if they're as vested and committed and make a decision to have a great relationship. It's possible.
Well, just picking up on that, Howard, you're saying so that if one person says to another, would you be sure to pick up your clothes off the floor and put them in the hamper? You're saying just do it?
Just do it. Just do it. And if you don't do it, take a look at, you know, what's going on. And, you know, often you're not paying attention, or I don't think it's, you know, resistance in general. It's just that people are busy, and Bea mentioned the ADD, which I think kind of comes into it. And as people are getting older, we, you know, sometimes forget through things. So, again, don't make a big deal about it. Just, you know,
just
talk nicely. And most people are just going to do it. Most people agree, yeah, it's not a good idea to have your clothes on the floor.
Well, and Bea, just picking up on what both you and Howard are talking about, and I'm thinking myself included, about how tone, body language, all these almost subliminal messages can be sometimes more powerful than the actual words we use.
Yes, people often deny what the intent of their words were by minimizing the effect of their tone. And honestly, people often don't hear themselves. So my husband and I have developed something where if I'm using a tone that he finds upsetting, he'll say to me, tone. Just that word. We agreed on a neutral word, tone, and I'll go, okay, and I'll, like, take a step back and go, all right, sorry, let me try again, because I want to have a constructive conversation. That's my goal. If my tone's getting in the way, let me change my tone.
So it's not like your tone. It's just the single word tone. That's
right.
So interesting.
Yes. So I often ask people, choose a neutral phrase that you can agree upon when you're not mad at each other. So if either one of you, and it could be either person, you know, having a phrase that they use with the other, you know, and so mine might be follow up.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, let's go back and, like, try to redo this. So it's shorthand. It helps people, you know, instead of focusing on you didn't do this and you didn't do that and your tone was blah, blah, blah. It's just you can give and receive feedback that's constructive.
And Howard, just picking up on that, and then I do want to get to our callers. I mean, it sounds like at the base of nagging is that people are mad at each other. They're angry with each other.
Well, not at the base. The base is just kind of, in my opinion, Marty, just, and you're asking great questions, by the way. The base is kind of just not the getting things done that need to get done, which is normal in a relationship. What happens is when they're not getting done for whatever reason, it's natural that we're going to get mad and angry, and then my job is to regulate my negative emotions. Let me say one of the things. One of the best antidotes to nagging is to build what I call reservoirs of positive connection. So, you know, even if you're a little bit mad, put it aside. Talk about it later on. It's not that big a deal. And do something fun. Take a walk. Go to a baseball game. You know, go to out to dinner, a romantic dinner. So building the positive is one of the best way to make nagging less of an issue in your relationship. So build the positives. And it's really easy to build the positives. Make love. Kiss each other. Hold hands. Write love notes. So on and so forth.
And Howard, thank you. Does that work to diffuse?
Absolutely. Stop. What I tell people that come to therapy and workshops, you know, we don't even let, we do this weekend workshops sometimes, and we tell people, you're not going to even talk about an issue the first day. No issues, and you're just going to go work, you learn some skills, and you're going to go out and do fun things, and we do activities for people, painting pictures together, and it tends to work really, really well. Stop fighting, have fun, and you're on
and
your way to
thank you,
a happy relationship. And I let Bea's, you know, Bea's tone and follow up. That's wonderful because it's a way of kind of focusing on what's really important, getting things done, and not letting things go downhill in terms of nasty fighting.
Well, we are talking about nagging today on Radio Times, what it is and what to do about it. Howard Markman joining us by telephone, author of Fighting for Your Marriage, professor of psychology, also co-director of the Center for Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver. His website, loveyourrelationship.com. Bea Janet Hibbs with us here in our Philadelphia studios. Her website is trytoseeitmyway.com, which happens to be the title title of her book. She's also a psychologist and family therapist in private practice in Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. B, did you want to say something before we get to our callers?
Just a sidebar. One is another solution that I think it would be helpful is for the naggy to remember not to overpromise, because people are often very well-meaning and they'll, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll get to that. Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot. And so one of the things that's helpful is to have a plan. When will I do it? And to let, you know, the other person know, you know, I'll do it by X, you know, and if I haven't, you know, you're welcome to follow up. And it's also sometimes helpful to have almost a structured business meeting where the person who's anxious about, is this really going to get done, because they've lost trust that it will really effectively get done, you know, can manage their anxiety by saying, I know we're going to talk about this on Friday. And so both people are held accountable in a particular way.
Well, let's get to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Laura from Doylestown joining us on Radio Times. And Laura, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
You're
welcome. I just wanted to call, and I know this is a little bit annoying, but brag about my relationship, which is great. And we don't argue anymore. We're going on our 25th anniversary. Part of it's because my husband's really great, but it's also because when I figured out that I could just trust him to always love me, and that whatever he was doing comes from a good place and comes from that, then I stopped looking for, you know, why he was doing this to me or why he wasn't doing it or whatever it was, and realized that he was doing a lot of really wonderful things for me. And I try to appreciate that, and it makes me want to do more good things for him.
And Laura, did you have an epiphany, or is this something that you learned over time, that you did argue and then you began to see that it really wasn't working, or that you were arguing about things that really didn't matter to you?
Yeah, in the beginning I was very insecure, and I think I was always trying to test his love, and then I realized that he does love me, and he's really solid, and that was the most important thing. And so we don't have any code words or any systems. We just always assume the best of the other person, try to be appreciative, and it makes us both want to do nice things for each other.
Well, that's really nice, and you've been, you know, 25 years. Let me give B. Janet Hibbs a chance to weigh in on that.
Laura, you know, you are one of the marriage heroes in terms of being able to figure this out for yourselves intuitively, which I think is wonderful. Let me try to concretize what you've done. You've basically made benign interpretations of each other. You've given credit where credit is due, and assumed both benign intent and also appreciation. For folks out there who are thinking, how can I do this? I'm going to give you a simple trick. Put 5 dimes in one pocket, and before you issue a complaint, you have to change those 5 dimes by giving credit, a compliment, appreciation. Do that 5 times till all the dimes have changed to the other pocket. Then you can issue a complaint.
Howard, you want to weigh in on that?
That's called change.
Change we can believe in, right?
Just one. We have to have fun when we're working with couples and talking about things like this. So one really important thing is that, again, persistence really is important. It sounds like, I think it was Laura, you know, there were some issues early on. And
right.
Research shows that if you're having trouble even thinking about divorce, but you don't, 5 or 6 years later, you're really happy you didn't get divorced and much happier in a relationship. Now, some people may have gone to therapy or a workshop or read a book or just kind of hung in there and thought more positive thoughts. So I think too many couples get divorced and break up prematurely. So obviously there are unhealthy relationships,
sure,
like infidelity and abuse, where breaking up is not a bad idea.
Yeah, and Laura, thanks for calling into Radio Times. But Howard, she talked about having to learn to trust her husband, to trust that he loved her. And that was something that she had to learn early on in that relationship.
Right, and I hope that's because her husband, it sounds like, communicated love in other ways. You know, I love you, I'm here for you. And I think when she's talking about trust, we're not talking about trust typically in terms of infidelity, but trust that that he's going to be here for me, supportive of me, my friend, attracted to me. And that's what love is. Those are the key components of love from our research and others.
Let me get Erica from Lambertville to join us on Radio Times. And Erica, go ahead. You're on Radio
Hi,
Times.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi. This may be a conversation for another time, but what about, you know, I'm a mom, and I know my husband and I, we have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, 12-year-old daughter, 9-year-old son, and our sort of requests, I would say polite requests, turn into, become sort of shrill commands at some point, you know, after the 10th request for things. So there's also that sort of dynamic. What would the speaker say about the dynamic between parents and offspring and nagging?
And Erica, you're not alone, and actually, B, you had mentioned that that even in the adult relationship, it sometimes feels like the parent-child relationship.
It often does, and so Erica, thank you for raising that, because nagging, as you said, is across relationships. One of the things that I think can help parents get out of that bind, because it truly is a feeling of powerlessness, in a sense, over your, you know, what you need to for your child to do, is think about getting first in a neutral spot and thinking of what's a logical consequence, not a punishment, but a logical consequence. And then your child will take more ownership. Also, if they can help you come up with a solution. So if something is repetitive, like you're not doing your homework, or it's late, or the dog ate it, that sort of thing, then you perhaps need to think about with your child, okay, this isn't working. I'm tired of getting on you, and you're tired of having me scold you. What can we do different?
So the idea of sitting down and having a sort of rational conversation about nagging in this case. Howard, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I'm a really behaviorist on this, and there's some great parenting programs out there. Marion Forgach, Triple P is another program. But the idea is that the patterning the caller is talking about, we would call coercion, and it predicts a lot of problems later on. So you don't want to get to the 10th time. You know, after 3 or 4 times with your child, depending upon how old, that if it's a younger child, you know, just changing the contingencies and not letting the child get away with negative behavior. And even with an adolescent, you know, setting ground rules and sticking to the ground rules. And if the ground rules are broken, then there's consequences. So setting reasonable, age-appropriate consequences, working as a team with your co-parent, if there is one, is one of the best ways to deal with that pattern of coercion with kids.
And what I hear coming from you, Howard, is being consistent about that. And as parents, as sometimes busy parents especially, it's hard to be consistent.
Sal Mnuchin, who worked in Philadelphia for a while, once said to me, you know, Howard, when I had my son Matt about a year and a half ago, he said, Howard, being a parent is by far the hardest thing you are ever going to do, and I speak from personal experience. So we're not going to be consistent all the time. So the key is just not doing really negative things, you know, yelling, swearing, and this holds for marriage, being abusive, that sort of thing. So it's really not doing the really terrible negative things that predicts problems. Otherwise, just kind of working together and realize we're human, and just kind of, you know, try to stay the course. But, you know, don't have overly high expectations for your spouse or your child or for yourself as a parent, because then we kind of drive ourselves crazy. We're human. Get advice. Talk to me. Read a book. And
take
and
a break.
A team if you have one. Take a break.
We have to take a break, actually, a radio break after, and we will be talking more about nagging and what to do about it with Howard Markman and B. Janet Hibbs right after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Center School, a private day school in Abington, Pennsylvania, with 22 years of success preparing children with learning differences for high school, college, and beyond. Using research-based learning strategies, small class sizes, and master-level teachers, Center School provides elementary and middle school students with a strong foundation in all content areas. An open house is scheduled for Tuesday, March 6th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. 215-657-2200 or centerschoolpa.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how we form habits and how we can break them. We talk with Charles Duhigg about what neuroscientists call the habit loop, cues, triggers, and rewards.
If you want to quit smoking, you should stop smoking while you're on a vacation.
Duhigg's new book is The Power of Habit. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Creative people, Beethoven, Newton, Wolf, suffered from psychiatric disorders. Does creativity mask the madness, or does madness boost creativity, expanding depth and insight? I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, a look at the connection between the creative mind and the disquieted mind in light of the new show of Van Gogh's works in Philadelphia. Today at noon, here on WHYY FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskow-Wayne. We're talking about nagging, and nagging is one of the things that people can do, couples can do, to drive each other crazy. In fact, a recent article in the Wall Street Journal said it was potentially more toxic than adultery. No one wants to be nagged, and few people want to be the nagger, so why do people do it, and what can be done to stop it? And that's our topic for today's Radio Times with B. Janet Hibbs and Howard Markman, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Actually, our engineer just whispered something in my ear here, and this is picking up on dealing with children. And Howard, perhaps I can go back to you in terms of consequences for children. And that was our caller right before the break. Instead of saying, you know, for 10 times, pick up your clothes or do your homework, what would that consequence be that would get that child to stop ignoring the parent?
Well, there's two types of consequences. One is negative and one is positive, and the positive consequence is really important. So you say to your child, okay, I'll use Matt, my son's name, you really need to pick up your clothes. If you don't pick up your clothes by 7 o'clock, then you are not going to be able to play your video game. However, if you do, then you can play your video game, and you can play it for an extra 15 minutes, something like that. So you kind of take something that they don't want to do and make what they do want to do contingent on what they don't want to do. So positive reinforcement is much better than negative reinforcement, but negative reinforcement has its place.
Do you agree with that, B?
I absolutely agree with that, and I also want to say to Erica, that caller, that once you get to the point where you have reached the end of your rope, you're often out of control. And so it's a good thing for a parent or a spouse to recognize when you're out of control, you actually have less flexibility and less leverage than if you stay in a neutral spot and kind of focus on the goal.
Let's get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have looks like Paula from Doylestown joining us on Radio Times. And Paula, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
I also read the article in the Times yesterday about the difficulty of couples counseling. So I wondered if the speakers could give us some advice about how we might find a good couples therapist, because I've not been able to find that many resources online to do that.
No, and obviously looking in the Philadelphia area, Paula?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Let me give Bea a chance to weigh in on that.
There's a few different online resources. One is, I'm going to give you the top of my list, and then I'll be interested to hear Howard's suggestions. Go to www.aamft.org, American Association of Marital and Family Therapists. They're a credentialing body, and it's linked closely to licensing. There is licensing for marriage and family therapy now. So those folks have been gone through a lot of hoops in training. You can also go to Marriage Friendly Therapist, and I can't remember if it's
dot. That's a website?
Yes, that's a website. I don't know if it's .org or .com. You can also, there are specialties within APA, American Psychological Association, who have some tracks in family psychology. And obviously, of course, then you have to like the person that you're working with.
Because it's about a relationship.
It is a relationship.
And I would assume people often will turn to friends or family that might have
word
had
of
a
mouth.
Great, word of
you
mouth.
You know, word of mouth is great.
Sure. Howard, anything you want to add to that, Howard?
Well, I want to say that even sometimes going to these credentialing organizations, that a lot of people are not trained well in what I would call evidence-based therapy. And there's a couple of forms of therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, interpersonal cognitive behavioral therapy, emotionally focused therapy. Those are the three forms of couples therapy that are considered to be evidence-based. So I would certainly try to find such a person. However, having said that, the quality of the relationship between the individual and or the couple and the therapist is very important. And you know, calling people like Dee, who probably knows the best people out there from your resources, is also a really good idea. And I know I play that role mm-hmm. in Denver, and sometimes nationwide we'll get emails and saying, who's really good in Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
You know, say Dee, who's really good in New York or California, et
cetera. Sure, Paula, thanks for the call, and good luck to you as well. Let me see what Tom from Germantown has to say. And Tom, go ahead, you're on Radio Times. That would be Tom from Germantown. And Tom, go ahead, you're on Radio Times. No, we don't seem to have Tom, and we will let's try Tom again. Go ahead, Tom, you're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to point out that a lot of times the person being nagged is interpreting what the other person's saying as nagging. And in mm-hmm. that moment, the person nagging feels like a nagger. And what I mean by all that is, like in my marriage, what's really worked is I've caught myself relating to what my wife has to say as nagging, as opposed to a contribution or something she, or a point she's trying to make. And as soon as I go down that road, like she's nagging me, I stop mm-hmm. listening, and she
right.
starts getting frustrated. So it's really, I guess my point is, there's kind of some responsibility on the naggie.
Mm-hmm.
To take responsibility for what they're creating and how they're relating to that person. And because mm-hmm. that really fuels the sense of frustration and really no communication.
Well,
so that's
a big one. It's very insightful. Let me give Howard Markman and then beat Janet Hibbs a chance to weigh in on that. Is he right, Howard?
Yeah, I think that is certainly one of the pathways. So Tom, it sounds like when he experiences his wife as kind of being negative, responds negatively and focuses on the negativity rather than on what the person's saying, and that's a major mistake. So,
yeah.
You know, someone like Tom should not make that negative interpretation that she doesn't love me or she's, you know, or a bad person, but saying, okay, what is she asking me to do, and is it reasonable to do it, or if it's not at that time, if I'm listening to WHYY and I'm in the middle of a show having a, you know, driveway moment, as we call it out here, you know, say, okay, you know, I'll do it as soon as the show is over, and then just take the responsibility to do it. It's fairly straightforward. So watch out for those negative interpretations. Don't let your view of the other person as negative stop you from doing what you need to do.
B, you want to add to that? And what I hear is kind of reframing the request.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, I think that's great. And, Tom, I think, you know, every therapist would probably like to clone you in terms of how you've intuitively understood how to have a constructive exchange about request and reasonable negotiating expectations. Can I take a moment just to say what we're not talking about are relationships where the seesaw of give and take is really broken and where, you know, the two mistakes you can make, you can give too much or you can take too much. And so nagging sometimes really does come about from that seesaw is broken. And even the most reasonable, constructive, you know, people in terms of how they approach a problem may be bumping up against, you know, that kind of brokenness, which is where, you know, and it's not inevitable that the marriage has to fail, but it's like, okay, they need a third party to help really identify what can reasonably be negotiated.
Because it sounds like what we're talking about are relationships that are, you know, pretty much within balance, but they have
right.
this, an occasional problem
right.
of nagging
yes.
or
yeah.
being the naggy.
Right.
Let me see
yeah.
what, did you want to add to that, Howard?
Yeah, just very quickly that if people are interested in further views of what I'm saying, I have a Huffington Post blog regularly, and my most recent one is on nagging. And I think it's really, really important for people to realize that the other person is not the problem. It's a problem in all relationships. And again, too many relationships just fail because of the consistent negative pattern. And, you know, people, those negative patterns attack love and destroy love.
Mm.
And based on this couples therapy New York Times article, that a lot of people say it's hard for doing couples therapy because we're going in there and couples are fighting and it's hard to, you know, to deal with couples fighting. And I think if you go to therapy and you're fighting in therapy, then you don't have the right therapist. I tell my couples, if you want to fight here, you don't have to fight at home. Don't pay me my outrageous fees.
Let me see what Rita from Audubon has to say. Rita, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Yeah, I was listening and I'm thinking about my husband, who I love very much, been married 25 years. He's a great guy, but he's a procrastinator, a dyed-in-the-wool procrastinator. I mean, he started a shed 5 years ago in our backyard. It's still a platform covered with tarps and half-done pieces of wood. So at this point, I can't even say the word shed. He just goes nuts, and I have no idea what to do. It's like, I don't want to attack his manhood, but that's what it feels like I'm doing. So I don't even know how to bring up the subject anymore.
So does it not come up at all, Rita? And you sounds like you're not, if not seething, it's bothersome to you?
Well, I look out my window and I see this pile of rubble, and I think, we keep talking about how we have no room in the garage, and someday when that shed is done, you know, but why start a project if you're not going to finish it? And I keep saying, you know, how about we work on it this weekend? And there's always some reason why we can't do it.
Interesting.
It just drives me crazy, and I don't want to continually nag because it does make him really angry, so I don't know what to do.
Well, Rita, let me start with Bea Janet Hibbs.
This is one of those alternative solution moments where you say maybe it's worth it to hire a handyman. you may want to, and you may have done this, approach your husband with a, why is this important to me? Because it's in my line of vision. It's driving me nuts. This has, you know, it's not a criticism of you. I can't stand to look at it. My proposal is hire a handyman.
What do you think, Howard?
Well, I think I think that's fine if these folks can sit down and kind of work that out together as a team, that's great. But sometimes it's a little bit harder. Number one, I think you need to stop this pattern that, you know, the neg is not working, so kind of just give that up. And, you know, then try to set a meeting and say, you know, hon, I really want to talk about this. I don't want to fight about it. I just don't want to neg you anymore, but let's kind of sit down and figure this out together. Mm-hmm. And why don't you tell me what your thoughts are? You know, because he has to have a perspective on this. There has to be a reason why, above and beyond that he's a procrastinator, which, again, is a kind of a negative personality characteristic. And, you know, sit down and you know, say, hon, what's going on? I'm just going to listen.
You know, and thanks for calling in, Rita. Good luck as well on that shed. I'm wondering, Bea, these are stressful times for families, and I wonder whether when families are under stress, that can lead to more nagging, as we have been talking about.
It can lead to more nagging, and I think that, again, the stressors, obviously, in society now are financial, largely. That ties in with a topic that men tend to be more stressed about, or at least express complaints about, which is, hey, you shop too much. Hey, you didn't stay within the budget. So any of the things you have to negotiate in a relationship, money, kids, chores, sex, the in-laws, all become heightened with, you know, with additional external stressors.
And to you, Howard, actually, someone else just typed into me, what about the employer-employee relationship if nagging is a problem? Do we apply the same principles we've been talking about?
Yeah, that's one of the pieces of great news from our research, is that these affect regulation skills, you know, listening without getting really upset, not taking things personally, working together as a team to solve things, can be generalized, to work relationships. And, you know, we do kind of the same communication skill training as do others in businesses, and it tends to work out great. So great point, and these things, these skills can extend and often do. But again, working as a team and realizing there may be some discrepancies in terms of power and control, I think what Bea said about the harsh economic times and stress is right on.
Well, and picking up on the title of your book, Bea, Try to See It My Way, Being Fair in Love and Marriage, it sounds like we all need courses in how to fight fair, or how to discuss issues that are troublesome, potentially, you know, hurtful to a relationship, and try to figure out how to have a rational conversation together.
It's beyond communication. It's also being able to have a shared perspective and being able to truly care about the other person's perspective. And it goes with the old saying, you can be right or you can be married. So the notion is, care more about the other person's perspective than being right.
And would you agree with that, Howard? Go ahead.
Absolutely. I think you're hitting, Marty, on a great point, that if couples could learn these skills before marriage, even while they're living together, which most couples do, that will go a long way. And we have research. We can cut the divorce rate in half by learning these skills early on in a relationship. And there are relationship education and marriage education courses, I'm sure, in the Philadelphia area that are free And people can go to smartmarriages.com to find out resources in their area that's run out of Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of resources, and the earlier the better in terms of learning these skills. It's kind of an ounce of prevention is, to use that, say, worth a pound of prevention of marital distress and conflict that's destructive and hurts our kids and hurts our society.
Well, on that note, we have to end our hour. And Howard Markman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Nice meeting you. Be over the phone and
you too, Howard.
To talk about baseball and divorce at some point. And we're going to beat those Phillies.
We'll follow up on
in
that.
The World Series.
We got to end the hour. Howard Markman and B. Janet Hibbs have been our guests today on Radio Times, talking about nagging and fighting fair. And Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, and the show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. For more information about Radio Times, go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out about Twitter and Facebook, email, and the archives. I'm Artie Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. And we do want to end things with Joan Jett and the Black Hearts with a song called Nag.
Whoa, baby, you're a nag. Buy me a rose. Who will you not?